Welcome, everyone. Welcome to yet another episode of the WTC Creme de la Creme. So the series that we do about the WTC. And usually we interview the captains of the top 10 teams from the last year's event. But this time, the episode will be about something a little bit different. Or the flavor of the episode is going to be a little bit different. And that is why, or the reason why, is because we are talking to the captains of the four new kids on the block, I would say, the four new teams that are jumping into the fray. And this will be, first of all, Cyprus, then hopefully, if the planets align well, New Zealand, then Israel, and then Republic of South Africa, although it could be mixed, and we shall see. Still, today, to talk about one of the new teams in the event, to talk about Team Cyprus, I have Marios Kontopyrgos, and I hope that I have pronounced it right. Hi, Marios.
Hi, how are you doing?
Welcome to the show. Have you done any podcasting before, or is this your first podcast?
First time.
All right, okay, then let's... I'll do everything to make sure that it's a nice experience, and you come back after the event to tell us how you won it. Sure. So, let's start with you. So let's start with the captaincy of the team. Mm-hmm. How did it come about that you are the captain of the team, and how did it come about that Team Cyprus is actually going to the event?
So I basically started getting involved with competitive Warhammer like 18 months ago, I would say.
Oh, wow. That's really fresh.
Yeah, really fresh, yes. And I didn't even have an idea that WTC existed, or like the level of the competitions that existed. So I think it was like March last year. I was talking to some friends. I was like, let's go this year. Let's go this year. It will be fun. We did some research. It was never before Team Cyprus. People play Warhammer in Cyprus, but not at a competitive level. Or at least until now. And they were like, okay, let's do it next year. So late August last year, I got in contact with Nicolas, the captain of Team Greece. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Nicolas, for getting me into contact with Tom, Tom Andriani. And that's how I created the team, basically, because there was a void in the captaincy. Like, no one was there, and I became its first captain.
It sounds like a common theme across also the more experienced teams, that usually the vacancy of the captain is just there up for grabs. Like, no one is really yearning to be the captain and do the whole, like, all the formalities and so on. So, a lot of respect goes to you for just picking this role up. But tell me, you mentioned that not many people play in Cyprus, Cyprus. So what is the community like? Are you organized around, I don't know, shops, or do you play at home in a basement? Like, how does it work? Because I think the world at large might even have a problem pointing to Cyprus on the map, not to mention knowing anything about the Warhammer community in Cyprus. So tell us all about it.
It mostly was a couple of localized stores, and they used to hold like small tournaments, but not the regular tournaments that you would see. It was mostly like knockout tournaments, so you play. It was like leagues, knockout leagues. And lately, the hobby has been a little bit stagnant. Hasn't been much effort going into it until my small group from my city, like four or five people, we met with some other people from a different city. And the community kind of grew. There's one of my teammates is the leader of the community, Chris. It's called Warp Gaming, the community. And right now we're about, must be like 25, 30 people, which is, for our standards, it's quite big. We
even for Polish standards, it's quite big.
Well, this is like a national 25, 30 people at the national level.
Mm-hmm.
So we've actually had a team event last Saturday. It was 24 people, six teams of four.
Okay.
Actually, Team Israel, four people from Team Israel came and played. It was organized by, I think you might know him, previous captain from last year's UN team, Alexander Kontakov.
Mm-hmm. I heard the name.
Yep. He was the organizer of the event. So it's picked up. Kind of happened, like meeting people through Facebook. And right now we're hosting tournaments every couple of months, like small ones.
Mm-hmm.
12 people, and we're hoping that we will be hosting a GT maybe in fall, late fall, we'll see.
Okay, all right. So usually when we interview the captains, you know, of the top 10, so the, mm-hmm. the major teams, they tell us stories about some sort of sophisticated system of choosing the national team.
Mm-hmm.
What was your system? Was it essentially grabbing whoever you can or picking like your closest buddies, or was there actually some sort of recruitment in place?
So to create the team, I had to prove that I do have four people that play Warhammer.
Mm-hmm.
And those were actually my friend, my close circle at the time. Mm-hmm. And actually up until that time, I didn't know anyone else who would play Warhammer in Cyprus. So it was basically us four, and then we did host a selection, tournament selection. Like we hosted a small three-round tournament for the selection of the other four positions,
mm-hmm.
and actually we had 10 people show up for the 10 spots, for the four spots, sorry. So mm-hmm. There was a lot of interest, actually, and basically from that we selected the top four people. And from now on, it will be tournament based. That's how I have chosen to do it. I know some mm-hmm. people like to host a tournament for some spots and then others be like on a selection basis based on what team might need. For us, for now, it's going to be purely tournament based, basically.
So it sounds like not only you're forming a team for an event, but it's also like a community building exercise yeah. almost.
Yeah.
So it's fascinating how, I mean, where do you start? How do you even advertise it to people? How do you reach the people who are interested in joining a national team? Do you, I don't know, do you ring all the stores and say, hey, could you put up like an advertisement for people to, you know, that we are organizing a tournament? Or how do you get people attracted to an event like that?
So for the first one, it was basically an advertisement on the Facebook group of, I think, pretty much the only store that's left in Cyprus.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, I got contacted with, like, the people from the other city contacted us. And we kind of first formed the community, and then they came to the team. So we started playing games with them, and then I tried to hype them up. Let's do this. They got hyped up about the prospect of going to Belgium, and that's it. Basically, it was a lot of lucky, fortunate events
mm-hmm.
falling in place for us. And yeah, it's exciting actually that. Honestly, last October, I was thinking that it's going to be the four of us who created the team and four mercenaries.
Mm-hmm.
And we ended up having to host a tournament for the selection of the team, which is quite impressive.
Yeah, it's impressive. You're absolutely pioneering something. So, you know, it's absolutely exciting to hear. And it's also, I don't know, invigorating just to know that there are still places where communities could grow, could become bigger, and so on. And there are people who are actually organizing this, which is mind-blowing. This hobby is just amazing in that way. So what is the ambition? Do you, you know, new kids on the block, are you going to smash through the wall like a Kool-Aid man or something, and then you're going to, I don't know, beat the shit out of everyone? Or is it more like carefully stalking your prey, you know, learning about your opponent so that next year you can finally hit them in the back, you know, someone stab them in the back or something? What's the plan?
So I think we're pretty realistic about our skill level as a team. Like, we won't sell ourselves short, but we know that we're fairly new, not only as a team, but also as players, as individual players. Like, a lot of people haven't been playing Warhammer competitively, like, before 2023, for example. So the goal is to do our best, try to play our best, make as fewer mistakes as possible, and try to, I mean, I'd be happy with, to be honest, like a win, getting a win, that'd be huge. It'd be super exciting. But whatever happens, like, the important thing is to go there, have fun. Because apart from like teammates, we've all grown to be friends. And so it's something we're doing with our friends, basically. So try to have fun, try to get the best results as possible, and then hopefully be able to repeat this in the years forward.
Yeah, I think one thing that is like a common theme among all the teams, many people say that they come to the WTC for the camaraderie, they come to for the friendly experience and so on, to learn new people, to network, to get sparring partners for the future. Because, and that I'll use this as a segue to my next question then. Do you have any, I get distracted by Kirby, by my dog. I don't know why he feels the urge to look outside of the window right now. Like, my wife called at the beginning of the recording, now my dog is pretending to be this old Polish woman who is, like, you know, patrolling the neighborhood. Anyway, I wanted to segue to the next question. So do you have any specific way of preparing for the event? So many teams travel to events, many teams organize team events, some other teams do TTS scrims, for example. So is any of that part of your preparation, or is it, you know, early days, you're first of all, you focused on building the team, and then, you know, more sophisticated preparation perhaps next year at this time, you're just I don't know, checking how it's going to be?
So first of all, new edition, so obviously lots of games in between us to kind of learn the edition, learn the armies, check which armies are viable, lists, etc. So that was the first part of the training, which is obviously I think the most important. And like I told you, we had the team tournament last Saturday. That was in preparation for WTC. And we have scrims TTS with Team Greece this week, actually. We might tonight, actually.
Cool.
And basically, that's pretty much it. We're not in a position, I think, to travel. I've heard of other countries traveling and playing scrims games with other countries, especially if they're from outside Europe and they're coming into Europe. That's usually actually quite beneficial because you can set up like a big trip. And, but for us, I think for now, to be honest, it's also a financial
burden,
issue. Yeah. So until we try to establish the team and maybe get some sponsorships, I think that's a hurdle, to be honest. But like I said, we've had the team tournament, we have scrims on TTS, so I think we're doing our best for now. Like, as far as training goes. Yeah.
So do you intend to play both in singles and teams, or are you focusing on the teams event mainly?
I have one player playing on playing in singles, and then I'm not playing for the singles. I think I need to do some studying lists and matchups, etc. And especially this year, which the schedule is a little bit tighter with everything getting pushed because of the new edition. So yeah, I'm avoiding singles for this year, especially like playing what 12 games since 12 games back to back. It sounds a little bit
deadly.
Deadly, yes.
Yeah, I totally agree. I am still in awe listening to players saying they've played like between 12 and 17 games at an event for 4 days or something like that. That's beyond me. But yeah, there are apparently people who can stand it, can do it, can win it. Well, but you've mentioned, you know, new edition, little time. So how are you liking the new edition? And is the new edition, again, a hurdle? Or does it make everyone's chances pretty much the same?
I think it's actually a benefit for us as a more new to competitive 40K. Because yeah, it kind of levels the field at the beginning. And especially with indexes being more simple in terms of rules from like having previous codexes with the 6 different sub-factions. For now, indexes make the game simpler. We'll see what happens with the codexes, of course. So I actually think it's okay as far as leveling the playing field. I forgot the first part of your question.
No, I mean, how do you like the addition?
That I think I'm from the few people who enjoy it. I actually like it. I find a lot of things. I really like a lot of the changes. Of course, okay, towering is a little bit brutal. But yeah, a few of the rules changes I really enjoy, I think.
Anything in particular that comes to your mind? I mean, I can give you my example because I played a game yesterday, for example, with my Tyranids against Custodes, against Václav from Team Czech Republic. Hi, Václav, if you're watching. We had a great game, and I came to realize how much I enjoy the blast rule, even though it's like very, you know, very, very down to earth. You just get one extra shot per 5 models in a unit. But I think this is what was missing in the previous edition. So Blast was, at first, when everyone heard what Blast is going to be, you know, everyone said, oh, it's going to kill hordes and so on, but then it actually never came up in games. It just, you know, wasn't that meaningful. This time, I think they nailed it. It's a simple but nice improvement. So yeah, so stuff like that. Is there anything that you find, for example, simple but still an improvement?
I actually like the changes to piling and consolidation. I think there was a lot of free movement that you could abuse before. Now, at least, it makes you think about how you're going to position your troops. So I don't think it's less complicated in a tactical way. So you still have to think how you're going to move. Although luck plays a little bit of a role here, because if you high roll a charge, then suddenly you cannot do your movement shenanigans and you have to bring everything base to base. But overall, I think I like that part. I think it requires some thinking and how to position properly to do the things you want to do. So I like that change because it removed the huge free movement that you could do earlier and it replaced it with something more tactical.
Yeah, okay. So I think that the edition itself probably needs a little bit of tweaking, but it's the same about every edition. I did mention that already. Innes from StatCheck wrote that article and mentioned in his in that article that, yeah, it's going to be hectic, it's going to be chaotic, it's going to be insane at the very beginning, but it's supposed to be like every edition. In time, everything will get smoothed out, and perhaps at the end of 10th edition, we will be saying, you know, it was the best edition ever.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Go on.
I was going to say, and still like Index Hammer, so, you know, there's obviously army imbalances, but well, you make do.
Yeah, we'll see. So I have one more question, and this question comes from Nathan, who couldn't be here with us due to the time zone, time difference, and so on, but his spirit is with us, and the spirit still wants to talk about birds because that's what Nathan does. So Nathan actually did some research. We did some research, and I don't think people realize how much research goes into those questions. So I actually went to a website that was, I can't remember if I have the name written down. Probably not. But I Googled Cypress birds. It gave me like the whole list of birds. Did you know that there are 400 species of birds discovered in Cypress? I didn't know.
I had no idea.
So there's your interesting fact. And now for the question. So 400. Nathan goes, and that's a quote. I hear that Cypress has a special type of pigeon called a wooden pigeon. Sorry, not wooden pigeon. Wood pigeon.
A wood pigeon.
Yeah, you can tell I'm not an expert. So his question is, who wins in a fight? An American pigeon or the Cypress wood pigeon?
Well, I actually have no idea. It depends on, like, I guess, their size, I would imagine. Or so, maybe peck ferocity.
Yeah, so I did read about the wood pigeons, and it turns out that they are protected by law in Cyprus. Okay. So, if you want to actually do something to them, you have to consult the Game and Fauna Department, and now it's becoming really embarrassing because we did really research this. So, only under permission you are allowed to actually hunt them, and so on. So, I think the American pigeon wouldn't be able to do anything to the wood pigeon. The wood pigeon is just invincible. That's it. That's the answer. Right.
Interesting fact. I had no idea.
Ah, there you go. So not only interesting about the game, it's also interesting about some other aspects. Anyway, Marius, we need to wrap it up. I need to give some space to other captains as well in this episode. So thanks a lot. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. Fingers crossed for placing as high as possible. I really think you can do it. And I hope that you feel welcome at the event.
Thank you very much. And just a shout out to all my teammates who supported us, and especially to Christophe, who's the leader of the Warp Gaming community. He helped way too much, way more than any like teammate would be expected to, and thank you for that, and all my teammates for making this possible.
Yeah, and I can attest to that, and I sign my name under this as well. Anyone who helps propel this hobby to new levels definitely deserves a shout out. So thank you, and thank you, Marius, and I'll see you at the event.
See ya.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
And to our listeners, please stay tuned for part two, where we will be introducing Nairi from Team New Zealand, right after the interval. And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back after a short break. And right now, we are going to focus on another team, another new kid on the block. This time, it's going to be New Zealand. And who better to talk about Team New Zealand than the captain of the team? With me today, I have Nairi Edgar-Wilson. Please tell me I pronounced it right.
You absolutely did.
Yes. I mean, we did rehearse it before the episode. So
you did, you can tell.
Yeah, it would be a shame if I didn't make it, but luckily I did. So yeah, Nairi. What took you so long? Why is it the first year that we have Team New Zealand at the WTC? What happened?
I think there's two large factors. One, obviously, was COVID. It was just made it difficult for everyone. And second has to be the distance. You can't get any further away from WTC than New Zealand.
True that, yeah.
I think even the majority of Antarctica is closer if there were flights available.
Probably, yes. So last year, after the WTC, I listened to, I think it was the Normal Blokes, where the guys did the summary of Team Australia's trip to the event. So not only the games and so on, but like from A to Z, from start to finish, the whole experience. And they said it costs an arm and a leg. It takes a lot of time and effort, well, and obviously money, to get to the WTC. So tell us about the struggle a little bit. Tell us about building the team. Tell us about the commitment. Like, did it, or was it complicated to even assemble the team from your country?
Was it complicated? Start in reverse. No. After the Australia one last year, I kind of got myself and a few others inspired. Like, we should actually just get this organized and get over there and represent our country. It'd just be nice to see us represented on that world stage for 40K. Mm. So we just put out applications and just had enough people apply that we had could form a team. The challenge that we're always going to have is the financial cost of it, because similar to Australia, it is not a cheap expedition.
I can imagine. So what about the team formation? Like, was it just, hey, we're looking for players, whoever is free, come and join us? Oh, but you have to bring money with you? Or what was the
pretty
process?
Much all of it? Yeah, we didn't have a large number of applications because it is still fairly new for us. We don't have a lot of team events over here. The interest in WTC is only just starting to develop, and so for us that was our motivation, was to get over there and start building a bit of hype around it and start getting some interest in the format going, so that for future years we can build upon it. We don't have the luxury of Poland, where everything is focused around WTC, or any kind of national scoreboard to select from. It really was just who's really interested in going and can get their own way over, and from that we selected the team.
Okay, so how would you describe the Warhammer 40K community in New Zealand then? Like, is it more, let's say, centered around like a community center where you play, or a shop where people play, or are people scattered all over the place and it's really hard to actually play with someone? So I don't know, maybe do you capitalize on things like TTS or something? Tell us all about it.
So it is fairly spread out. We are a country divided over two islands. We have the North and South Islands. And in each of those, we only have a couple of large regional centers. South Island really has Christchurch and a small one down Dunedin. Whereas North Island, I think the majority of the population in the country is living in Auckland. And then you got the capital, Wellington, at the bottom of the North Island. So you don't get a lot of players traveling between each of those. So we are a bit secluded in that. And there's a couple of different organizations that run tournaments. Down in Wellington, we have Properly Cocked, fronted by the lovely Steve Joel. So they run some nice tournaments down there. And here in Auckland, we have a couple of local gaming clubs. And then we have Kraken Wargaming, who run some of the larger tournaments.
All right. And is it common for people in New Zealand to also travel to, I don't know, Australia for tournaments? I think I've heard of like ANC or ANZ or one of those tournaments over there.
So it was ATC, the Australasian Team Championships.
But there was something I thought there is. Sam Lemon, who is like a good friend of our podcast, has his own podcast, which is called, I think, Wide World of 40K. And I saw him doing interviews with like representatives of Tanzania and some other teams that came to this. I thought it was called ANC or ANZ. I'll have to Google that later on. But
the ANZTC, so Australian New Zealand Team Championships. I think you're thinking of Tasmania, which is a southern state in Australia.
Okay. All right. So yeah, I'm clearly demonstrating that my geographical knowledge is poor and could be way, way better. But that was the abbreviation that I was thinking about. So it's not uncommon for you to mingle with people from Australia and to play together, right?
We have a little bit. So we sent two teams over to the ANZTC. We had the North Island and the South Island, or South Region, represented. Sent over teams. The other one, we had a few players go for Adelaide Uprising. And I believe we had Finn Decker went over to some regional one somewhere between Melbourne and Adelaide at one stage. But beyond that, it's not too common. It's the cost of traveling is a lot more expensive for us to get to Australia. And we have very few of them come over here. I think the last one I can recall was Adam Camilleri came over for one of our tournaments. And our chief player, he took out first place and then flew home even for prize giving.
Okay. So do you have, will you be the dark horse of the event? Like, you know, you come from a pretty obscure meta, I would say. Nobody knows what to expect. In our previous episodes, we said that 10th edition essentially makes everyone start at the same level.
Yep.
And then do you think that that secrecy of yours, the distance that makes you a secret to the rest of the players, will that play to your advantage perhaps?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Being realistic
the way we're looking at it is we have the equal opportunity of bad list writing as every other team.
True.
So do that. There is nowhere else more expensive than New Zealand to buy Warhammer models. And even if we could purchase them, a lot of stock is very limited in what we can access over here. So we can't, it's a bit harder for us to rapidly change our lists or always take the top meta armies. In that regard, we don't have any beta testers over here. So we didn't have any advanced access to the rules like some teams did. So we are a bit behind the ball there. And we are very insular in our community over here. So a few of us go over to Australia to play games, but in general, we don't have a lot of contact with other nations to practice against. So does it give us advantage? I don't, maybe. But yeah,
we'll see.
We'll find out.
So how about years of experience of playing the game? Do you have, how would you characterize your team? Are those people who have been playing over previous editions, or are those people who have been lured to the hobby because 10th edition appeared? So in the years, let's say, on average, how experienced is your team?
On average, I mean, we've had no one start in 10th edition. Everyone was at least playing all of 9th edition. We had a few who would have started during 8th. Myself, I actually started back in Rogue Trader and played through till 4th, where I then dropped out of the hobby. And only came back into it during 9th myself. So as for the modern 40K of it, I wouldn't say I'm super experienced. I haven't gone through a lot of edition changes, this being my first. And I think a lot of the team will be in a similar space.
Okay. And what's the overall goal or ambition of going to the WTC? Is it, I mean, you said you're very realistic about your chances and so on, but still, what's the plan? Is there a specific team that you would like to prove something to, or a specific place that or placing that you would like to take, or just networking, meeting the people, building relationships, and that'll do essentially?
I mean, when we started, I think there was two goals. One was just to get a team over and get represented and to try and build the community around this event for future years, try and get some more interest going. The other one is there's a bit of a rivalry with Australia, and we're not anticipating we're going to take up first place, but in their first year they did come 15th, so I think if we can get 14th we'll be very happy with that.
Okay. That's cool.
The other day we had no rivals as such, but Team England inadvertently made us one when they said they're going to take back the colonies, so they've got a mark on their back now.
Yeah, so I finally got to meet a fan of the podcast in Nairig, who actually listens and could even quote some bits of that. So I guess anyone but England, right? That's the
anyone but England.
Yeah. So okay. So tell me, do you have any specific, let's call them mechanisms to prepare? Is there anything that you meet up, or do you have a Discord where you share your lists? And how big is the group of people that are involved in this? Is it just the 8 that are going, or do you have maybe a coach like some other teams do, or some people like Poland bring a media person this year? So how big is the circle around the national team, let's say? And then can you shed some light on the preparation process?
So we only have the 8 players. We don't have any coaches, definitely no media personnel coming with us.
I'll do the job then. Can I apply?
You can do that, of course.
All right. I will be unbiased, but rooting for New Zealand.
Oh, thank you. So on us, it is all on our shoulders, the eight players. We are running through Discord, is where we all meet up, share our lists, and regularly chat through there. We have used both TTS to practice with and also just in-person meetups. So part of the challenge is because we are so separated, particularly by and two islands, it's not exactly cheap for the Southern guys to come up and join us. The rest of the team up in Auckland, and having David Gaylord over in the UK has made it its own challenge as well, because he hasn't been able to come and meet up with us. But yeah, so TTS has helped us bridge some of those challenges along the way.
So that's a guess, but yeah, David is pretty much the only person that I heard about. Does he like coach the rest of the team, or does he have any impact on the team, or do you like let him be and just, you know, send me your list, dude, and I'll include it in whatever document we need to send to WTC, and that's it? How does that relation function?
He's not so detached as that, and he's not coaching us, but he gives us more of an insight into what goes on over in Europe, and particularly in the UK scene. Mm-hmm. So without him, we'd be probably a bit blinder than what we currently are heading over. Mm-hmm. So he's been very nice to have on the team in that regard. But yeah, no, he's been a good asset for us, just in helping us anticipate what we can expect when we come over.
Mm. And then, again, if you've listened to the previous episodes, you do realize that I have this knack for asking questions about the captaincy itself. Yes. And I can't imagine not doing it now. So, again, what's your qualification to be the captain?
My qualification? I'm the idiot to put my hand up.
So it's, I think every community is characterized by the same feature, that nobody really wants to do it, but someone has to do it. So
yeah, that's it. I mean, I'm just the first sucker to put my hand up. For future years, we're forming a selection committee, and we'll be just taking open nominations from people who want to chase the role, and we'll be selecting captains from there.
Okay, so after listening to our podcast, I imagine other podcasts as well, speaking to people from Australia, speaking to David, speaking to whoever is there as a resource, how do you imagine your job at the WTC? Is it going to be just playing games, or will you need to put some more effort into it, and then is it going to be a hard job or not?
I think it's probably very hard. I don't have the luxury of spending as much time playing my games as everyone else does. You could do the pairings, and there's team manager. A lot of it is just management. Mm-hmm. So out of all of our players, I'm probably going to be the least prepared heading over. So in future years, having some coaching staff, some assistance along the way will be a huge advantage just to relieve some of that load. Mm-hmm. But having not gone through WTC before, I am a bit ignorant as to how much additional workload there is going to be through the event.
Okay. And, do you have any previous experience in doing the matrices and pairings and so on?
Yep, so we've had a few team events here through New Zealand over the last few years, but the largest we've had is a 5-person team. Okay. So for us, switching over to 8 persons is something entirely new for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a different scale. You need to take the tables into account as well, which I think the WTC has. It's, by the way, for everyone who might be listening, for me, it's 20 past midnight, and it's already Wednesday, the 19th of July. So on the 18th of July, WTC has released like their latest terrain layouts, I guess, on their Discord. So essentially, I'll use this as a segue to the topic about 10th edition. So first of all, how do you like it? How do you like the terrain? Do you think that your team is well prepared and that they had enough time to prepare for 10th edition?
One, we are liking 10th edition. I think it's more engaging to be able to do stuff in your opponent's turn. No longer is it, oh, it's your movement phase, I'm going to go get a beer, go catch up with some other people. Mm-hmm. And so it's a lot more engaging in that regard. Having the options going to rapid ingress and a few other stuff, it just gives you a lot more options that we haven't had previously. Mm-hmm. Are we prepared for it? Yeah. I mean, there's glaring problems with it. Tearing still isn't really addressed. Within WTC format, I think they've tried the best they can to limit the, how powerful that is. So I don't think it's as a, much of a problem in that format as it is in other tables. We prepared for it. Yeah, I think like a lot of other teams, we were just hanging on for every bit of information as it dropped. And as soon as something got those discussions going on at Discord as to how things could work, what we can do with it. And we've all, as much as we can around work and family commitments, we've been spending every spare second practicing as much as we can. So I don't think we could be any more prepared than what we are. And I think it's just exciting. That's probably the biggest motivator for doing well in a game is just being involved and excited to play it. I think if we were still playing ninth, I think some people were just tired of it. The excitement wouldn't have been there. So I don't think there would have been the same engagement.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Is there anything specifically that you like about the 10th edition? Like some people mentioned missions, some people mentioned some specific rules. Is there anything that you perhaps can take advantage of or something that you simply just enjoy?
I think the enjoyment is just that it's all new. The missions are all new. They're a nice, refreshing change. Playing with cards again is a not is refreshing. Just going rather than going into every game, going, these are the three secondaries I'm going for. I know my score is going to be a minimum of 80. Good luck trying to stop that. You've now got a bit of randomness to it, which does make it harder to do pairings and predictions for scores. But I think there's also a skill in being able to accept and see where those variations will come from.
Do your players share that view? So is everyone happy with, for example, how the missions play, how you score points, etc.? Or are people sort of still, you know, clinging to that old system with set missions, building lists towards those set missions? You knew exactly what your army has to do at what time to score that many points. So how does the team feel about that?
No one's expressed any dissatisfaction or unhappiness with the current format, because you still do have your fixed secondaries you can take if the situations arise. So I think some of the players have been looking at lists that might enable them to do that when the situation arises. But in general, a lot of times tactical blind game play just is the stronger one, because you can't always rely on your opponent giving up the right one or being able to play around what they want to do.
Okay. I need to ask this as well, because, again, as I mentioned, and I think it's, I'm not the only one who would be sharing that sentiment. New Zealand as a 40K scene is probably a huge unknown to most people. Is there any social media outlet or any podcast or anything else? Like last year, before Australia won the WTC, I could safely say that I'm one of the not many in Poland who listens to the normal blogs, because I just devour podcasts like crazy. After the WTC, it exploded, and like the interest in, for example, the normal blogs became huge. So is there something that, you know, you can, let's say, sell to us right now that maybe the Polish fans will jump on after the event if you perform well or something like that?
We had Kraken Wargaming had their own podcast, which they were doing, but they're on a bit of hiatus, I believe, at the moment. I haven't seen anything released. So honestly, everything's a bit secluded. We're keeping it a little bit secret. So if you actually want to experience the scene, I'm just going to say you have to come over.
All right. Okay. Or after the WTC, you can start your own podcast, or someone from the team can start their own podcast and talk about the experience and so on. That would be actually kind of exciting, because there are days when I have nothing to listen to. So come on, New Zealand, help me. All right. I also have, since, you know, Joker is traveling for business and I couldn't have him on. And Nathan is, I think right now he is actually recording an episode of his own of Stat Check. I have consulted, and I have here the spirit of Nathan, and I have his question that I have to ask, which is the usual, something that you yourself asked for, the bird-related question.
I was expecting it, so.
Yeah, so no surprises there. You'll knock it out of the park, I'm sure. So for those things, we actually do kind of a lot of research, and I checked what birds are there in New Zealand, and I found the obvious one, the kiwi, but then there is a kaka as well. And apparently there is a piwakawaka as well.
Yes.
That's amazing. Those are like the best bird names I have ever heard of. But that's not the question. The question is, and I quote, since New Zealand, by the way, this is Nathan's opinion in that question. Since New Zealand continues the trend of having terrible birds for bird duels, we matched you with another country with an equally terrible bird. So who would win in the fight? A Kiwi or an English Robin?
English Robin. I mean, it's a very simple battle, the Kiwi. Kiwis have Kiwis have no natural predator. So it's going to sit here, it's going to forage its food. The Robin will be the instigator. So it's going to try and fly its way down here to pick the battle, and it'll perish from exhaustion.
So I love it. So does the Kiwi have any arsenal of weapons that it's going to use, just out of sheer curiosity?
I mean, good luck trying to find them. They're nocturnal birds, and it's very hard to find them. Most New Zealanders have probably never seen a Kiwi in the wild.
That's a good one. That's a really good one. Yeah.
Okay. I do like that he's gone and picked our softest bird. The Kiwi. Well, I mean, we've got the Kia over here. Oh, I mean, you got to go for the Kia. The Kias live down the South Island, and they tear cars apart for fun. Innocent tourists come along, and they come back to find that their car has just been destroyed by these birds. And so I don't know why you'd pick a Kiwi when there's an actual bird there ready to pick a battle.
I think he was just going for the national birds, or the birds that are regarded as national birds. So, yeah. I mean, shame on you, Nathan. If you listen to this, shame on you. Just go stand in the corner. But he did have a follow-up question, and this is a very simple one. Does New Zealand have pigeons?
I'm sure we do. Yes, we do.
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, it's absolutely American, so we have to excuse.
Obviously, I'm outside my window at the moment.
Okay, and earlier today, come again.
They're called a kakadu, and they're a gigantic bird. They're probably one of the largest pigeons in the world.
And I did some research earlier today on the birds for the part of the episode about Cyprus, and I found that they have the wood pigeon, and apparently New Zealand also has one. So
yeah, so this is the kakadu, is our wood pigeon.
Okay, all right. So that's it. Right, Nairi, I'm out of questions. Is there anything else that you feel like should be plugged, or anything else that the international community should know about New Zealand, or the scene over there? Anything else that you would like to share with the world at large?
You've got to come to New Zealand. Our tournaments are great, very well run and organized. If you want to see the scene, you've got to come and experience. Best part about it is we're probably one of the best places to take a holiday. So if you're coming for a tournament, come over, spend a couple of weeks, explore the place. It is absolutely beautiful. But as for the team, feel free to buy us a beer when we get to WTC. We're going to be very tired.
Yeah, I imagine. That's the question that I had in my head but forgot to write down. How do you think you're going to handle things like jet lag and so on? You said you're going to be very tired, but are you traveling maybe like a couple of days in advance to actually get used to it, or are you just going to play jet lagged?
I'm going to play jet lagged. I'm going to be used to it. I'm a shift worker, so I'm going to sleep wherever. I'll be fine. Most of us are arriving, I think, on the Tuesday, so we've got a day or two to get adjusted for it. Some of us have foolishly signed up for their War Master as well, so I think they're arriving Monday night to go straight into War Master. So by the time we get to the team's event, they're gonna be very tired.
Yeah, it's going to be a real test of endurance. As far as I know, those can take a toll on people, especially like if they are successful, then it's, I don't know, 12 games or something like that. So good luck with that. Overall, good luck in the tournament. We are doing this, as you probably know, we are doing the studio over there. So I would be looking forward to interviewing you or your team members over there and give you some more spotlight. And yeah, I guess we'll see each other at the event.
We'll see you there.
Yeah, fantastic. Good luck with your preparations, and see you at the venue. Thanks, everyone. And we're on to part 3, Republic of South Africa. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the third part of our episode about the newcomers at the WTC. So far, you have seen Cyprus. So far, you have seen New Zealand. Now, the time has come for South Africa. And who better to talk about South Africa with me than the captain of South Africa, Liam Smith. Hi, dude.
Hey, Tweek. How are you doing? Happy to be here.
And I'm happy to have you as well. I mean, I've been waiting long for this, and that's because I have really a lot of questions. Because first of all, your country is a complete unknown, I think, not only to me, but to like the 40K world at large. But also, and I'm going to start with this. I'm going to start my questioning with this. You are the only team that I have experienced that has its own media person or like a spokesperson. So I had the pleasure to speak to Lizzie via Instagram, and I haven't seen that for any other team. And you also seem to have like a celebrity coach, as far as I know. So does that mean that there is some sort of like an, I don't know, Arabian sheik behind you, and you have like a roster of the best players in the world that nobody knows that you do? How does that work?
I mean, we desperately hope so, right? Like, if we arrive at the WTC and we discover that is the case, that would be quite fantastic.
Okay, so tell me, you know, how does it happen that excuse the term, but fairly unknown team has a spokesperson, has a celebrity coach, and so on. Where did that come from?
So I think a lot of the idea behind that, right, is that we don't know what we're doing. So we'd like to get on board people who do know what they're doing.
All right, to push you on the right track.
Help the journey. Yes, exactly. Uh-huh. So our social media person is actually the significant other of one of our players. She volunteered to help us out. It's been really great. It's been instrumental in like securing us some sponsorships and stuff. Wow. Just getting the word of the team out there. So it's definitely been a great help to have. And then I guess the same for the coach. One of our players, Kyle McIntosh, he's on the coaching program, on Pure Tide program for connected. Kyle reached out to us, and we came to an agreement. So we took him on as coach, and he took on us on, I guess, in our helplessness. Mm-hmm. And that's where we're at now.
Okay, so maybe let's come back to that, to the topic of your coach and so on in a moment when we discuss like the roster and etc.
Hello.
But yeah, let's start with your community, because when I spoke to Cyprus, and people who are listening to it will know about it as well. Cyprus had a team that was composed of essentially people who just wanted to go, because the community is fairly small, they just gathered pretty much anyone who wanted to go, and that's it. What is the community like in South Africa, and is it similar that you just posted somewhere and hey, we're doing this WTC thing, is anyone up for it, or is there like a well-developed community that was waiting just for someone to volunteer to be the captain and to actually, rally everyone, bring them together and go?
I think it's a bit of both, to be honest. So we are definitely a very small community. I think a year ago we had our largest tournament ever, which hit 60 players, which was organized by one of my team members. So we're comparatively a very, very, very small country as far as 40K goes. Mm-hmm. What we do have, though, is a fairly entrenched set of community members. There is a subsection of them that are very, very active in the tournament scene. And there's some guys that have been playing this game essentially forever. So up until... We've also never really engaged in teams. We've actually had like our first ever team tournament in the country a couple of months ago. So mm-hmm. we came up with this idea that we wanted to go. And then how we essentially started out is we started reaching out to individual guys that were known quantities in the community, that were known for sportsmanship, that were known as good players. We asked them if they wanted to go. And then from there, we sort of started branching out. It is very much a matter of if you were able to commit to go early, you definitely got bumped up the priority list a lot, player skill aside. But at the same time, there's definitely more people now that, we've gotten the social media presence stuff, we've definitely heard about more people who are very keen for the Team SA thing. And we'd like to do it again next year if we manage to go again. So there is more demand. It's not a case of, we we're just stuck with whoever managed to put their hand up. But we try to be quite selective in that this first sort of selection of the team and this first team that we're trying to send.
All right, I get it. So I have a thought. I guess it's the time to ask this question now. Is there any team that you are, for example, looking up to, or any team that you are, I don't know how to word that question, but I'll tell you where it comes from. And excuse me, if I don't want you to take it the wrong way, but when I heard about your country coming to the WTC, my immediate thought went to that old Disney movie about Bobsleigh crew from Jamaica. It's like, I know it's like, it sounds bad, but that was my immediate
No, that's hilarious. That's pretty and much then, on point.
And then for anyone who hasn't seen that movie, it's essentially a bunch of people who are doing different sports or not doing sports at all from Jamaica. They desperately want to go to some sort of like to the Olympic Games. And they find a coach from America. So like, you know, there is like a little... I don't know, it's somehow related to you as well. You find a coach from abroad. And then you go to that event, and what happens? Happens. But they go to that event, they lack their own identity. Now, this I am not accusing you of, but that's in the movie. And the captain of that bobsleigh team even goes, and like when they do this, they start the bobsleigh before they jump into it. They go, like, normally teams go like 1, 2, 3, and they start running, jump into the bobsleigh. So the captain of that team in the movie looks up to Switzerland as one of the best teams. So he even does the countdown in German, just because that's how the Swiss team does it. So they were looking up to that team very much. And now I was wondering whether there is any comparison like that between the movie and reality with you. So is there any country that you're looking up to? Is there anyone whose, I don't know, practices and experience you would like to mimic? Or are you coming with your own identity and, you know, Kyle is just an addition to what you're bringing?
Okay.
It's a long-winded question.
That's definitely not one of the questions I prepared for. I'll give it a shot. So I think, firstly, Cool Running should be mandatory viewing for anyone who's watching this right now. So if you haven't seen it, you know, turn off the podcast and go watch that. I think I'm going to make my team watch that as well before you go. But secondly, I think for me personally, because I obviously applied for the captaincy with WTC and I started putting the team together there, coming into this completely unfounded, not knowing whatsoever what's going on. I watched a hell of a lot of StatCheck's Enter the Matrix episodes, and particularly the episodes that Innes was on. So I guess like a team for me in my personal capacity would be Team Scotland. I think it's much of the same kind of like hearing about his experiences as a first-time captain has definitely informed some of the things that we were doing, and some of the questions that we were able to ask has definitely helped there. I think for the rest of the team, we definitely have a bit of a hero worship thing going on with Team Australia to some extent. And then I guess also a bit of a Southern Hemisphere grudge at the same time. But yeah, like that idea of another team that's also, you know, in their own insular meta bubble from like way far away, divorced from the rest of the world or from the rest of the 40K world, you know, coming into the WTC. I think that's something that we'd relate to.
Okay, that's really cool. So I wasn't very far off with my question, to be fair.
No, not at all. No, I think you're actually spot on.
that's so cool. Yay. So tell me, what is the ambition of the team? So it's your first event. You know what the other teams are capable of. You've either, you know, watched two podcasts, different podcasts. You know what the teams bring. Is your ambition to basically go and make friends, or is it to go and kick some serious butt?
I think there's a bit of both. There's definitely a very large drive in the team right now. We're very motivated. There is a million reps being slammed at the moment. And I think there's definitely a strong desire that even though we might not know what we're doing, like we want to do as well as we possibly can. So we're putting in the reps, we're putting in the time to try and make that happen. At the same time, we definitely would like to set this up as a permanent thing. Like this will be obviously be the first time South Africa's ever going. If we can, you know, set up the infrastructure and the, you know, the friendships and the connections on that side, to sort of bring us into the global 40K community a bit more, and to be able to make this a permanent thing and to, you know, make those friendships, maybe, you know, have something that comes from this. My personal ambition of this is, if we come back from WTC, I desperately like to make teams 40K a much larger thing in South Africa. It's not something that we really do, and if we can, you know, go to WTC and bring back our experiences there and, you know, introduce to the community here and, you know, make that the de facto way to play 40K, I think that would be fantastic. So I think there's an element of both.
Okay, yeah, that's, it makes perfect sense. I mean, and I guess this is the best place to make those connections, to make to meet, I think, the best players in the world, because if you think about it, there is no better place, maybe LVO or LGT or something like that, but probably none of them will bring as many skilled players and as many celebrities in one place as this. So yeah, I think that's the right way to go. So,
and I guess it's, for all of us, this is a hobby that we're very passionate about. So, like, making friendships with other people who are also heavily invested into the competitive aspect of it is something that I guess appeals to all of us. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, how would you measure your level of skill? Like, if, again, to the majority of the community, you might be the dark horse of the event. You come with the, let's say, advantage of not being known almost at all. So do you have any comparison to other teams in terms of skill? And then how would you gauge it, or measure it? Like, how do you think will you perform at the event?
That's honestly very hard to say. To be perfectly honest, I have no idea. So there is, there's a couple of members on the team that either have played internationally or that play TTS quite regularly, whether that's leagues or something like that. So we've got like a rough idea of where those players like fall in terms of skill, if we like regard the global community, but it's also a very small sample size. So it's hard to draw like hard conclusions of that. And we're very aware of the fact that we've got like our very own special little bubble in South Africa. Our meta is very weird, which is informed by the way we, you know, do terrain and the way we organize tournaments here. And you know, a lot of our players, it's kind of one thing to know you're a strong player in your local community. It's another thing to know whether or not that translates. Mm-hmm. So I think, yeah, like where we're currently at, it's one of the reasons why we also were quite happy when Carl Grundy approached us, just to have a little bit more of that element of, you know, busting our own silos, breaking up our own preconceived notions, and just like relating what we do and our skill levels to the larger community.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you said that your meta is very much shaped about by the terrain that you have. Is it also shaped by such a very prosaic thing like model availability? Like, is South Africa well equipped with, you know, GW shops, models, armies, etc., or are your guys playing with whatever was available?
So I think our model availability is weirdly enough very good, given how far we are away from Europe and the major population centers. It is, Warhammer is in a weird space in South Africa where it's still a very expensive hobby because our country is obviously also, you know, economically not the strongest. So it is a luxury hobby and it is expensive. But at the same time, comparative to other places, the models here are real cheap. So model availability, generally speaking, doesn't seem to be that big of a thing for us. It's sometimes hard to get our hands on Forge World or Direct Order stuff of some of the more esoteric things. But yeah, that's why, you know, there are other means, whether it's borrowing, lending, or other things to obtain those models.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So tell me about this. So let's say, again, coming back to that movie that I mentioned, you got in touch with Kyle. Kyle steps in, comes to the, you know, virtual meeting with the team, and he like looks at the people there, assesses the skill, and so on and so on. Did he go like, or was he like, oh my god, these guys are great, I'm not needed here? So which one of those was it?
That's a good question. I guess it's Carl has definitely been more involved with us with, say, the pairings and the strategy side, as opposed to like the raw games that we've played. I know he has gotten a couple of reps into some of our players. We were very proud when Orion beat him on the first try. But other than that, yeah, so I think he's definitely more there for us from a holistic view as a coach rather than like these are the mechanical things we need to improve. And mm-hmm. like that also, I guess, like lends into his assessment of skill. Like I think he's very much more there to deal with our disparate personalities and how we approach the game and how we approach pairings as opposed to trying to, you know, elevate us as an individual player on a mechanical level or whatever.
Okay. And yeah, how about your, you know, pairing skills and doing matrices and so on? You mentioned that team events is not something that is very popular or has been very popular in South Africa. So, and you are very fresh to this. So Enter the Matrix, as you mentioned, probably is a good place to start to read up on how to do it, because Typhus wrote this great article about doing the matrices and pairings and preparing for a team's event. And then you have Kyle and so on. So do you think you have it nailed down by now, or is it still something that you're working on? Because to be perfectly honest, it is not an easy thing. Like, I've been doing it for the first time in the tryhard team's tryhard league now, and I wasn't always able to get the exact pairings that I was going for. So how do you feel about it as a captain, and will this be your responsibility, or is there anyone on the team who's going to be helping you with that?
Yeah, so as it stands, that's going to be my responsibility. And then as far as the rest of the question goes, I guess it, as any skill, it's something that you develop as you practice. It's hard to say that, you know, we've nailed it down. It's definitely something that we're working on. It's something that, like, we've set up a bunch of exercises for ourselves to try and get better at it. You know, we're doing some scrimmages and things like that to try and see, you know, what the actual practical results are when we try and use these skills. It's something that there's room for improvement. We're hopefully getting better at it. But at least we're not as fresh as we were a short while ago.
Okay. And while talking about being fresh, this year I think is going to be different than the years before, because it's the entire edition that is fresh. Some say that the time for preparation is too short. Some say that adaptability is one of the skills that they were looking at their players anyway, and the addition shouldn't catch anyone by surprise. So how do you and your team feel about the new addition? You mentioned you have a bunch of guys who have been playing this game forever, so I understand that they are familiar with or, you know, accustomed to addition changes, but probably not all of them. So how does the entire team feel about the new addition and the short amount of time that everyone is granted to prepare?
There's really two answers here, I guess. The first one about how we feel about the new edition, there's definitely some mixed feedback based on some of the choices that were made in constructing mm-hmm. the new edition. But as it relates to the team specifically, I think we're actually really excited about that. We feel that, you know, coming into a meta that's completely been upended, we're playing into a lot of, like, very established countries that, you know, have gotten a million reps on ninth and have, you know, done incredibly well in ninth, and then hopefully that little bit of them being thrown off to an extent by coming into the new edition, having to adapt, it just lowers the gap between us and them a bit, where, you know, we're in the same boat. It's not, you know, quite the institutional difference that there might have been otherwise, and we feel like that's an opportunity for us to exploit, to try and, you know, get those edges, get the reps in, adapt faster than other people maybe could, and then hopefully try and leverage that.
And are you bringing anyone else with you apart from the core team and probably the coach? I'm assuming Kyle is coming with you, but if you could then confirm, then it would be great. And then is anyone else coming, like anyone to help, anyone to you know, even the quote-unquote water boy or someone like that, are you, or towel person, are you bringing anyone like that as well?
Unfortunately not. It's the core team that is coming, and then Kyle is going to be staying with us. He's participating in the War Masters, and then he'll be staying with us for the week, and then doing the coaching while we're at the event. So he will also be there. But sending a team from South Africa is prohibitively expensive. It's one of the things that we've been working on, is trying to set up the infrastructure and the sponsorships to try and do this on a permanent basis. Because it's real bad. Unfortunately, like, that precludes us from really bringing anyone who isn't part of the core team.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was my next question, but you managed to at least in half answered it already. I imagine it's a burden for anyone traveling from outside of the continent. It probably is a burden to get there. So at the beginning of our conversation, you mentioned that that you have Lizzie for obtaining sponsorships. So tell us something about it. Like, is it easy? Is it difficult? I understand it's mandatory, but for example, do you know from her feedback, like, is it difficult to obtain sponsorship for a team from South Africa flying to Europe to play in the World Teams Championship where players push little dolls on plastic dolls on a table? Is it a challenge?
So it's a, I guess it's a bit of a layered answer. There was a couple of sponsorships that we managed to get early that was relatively easy. A couple of them from local 3D printing companies that were helping us source the models we needed. That sort of fell into place. You know, we're doing some social media promo for them. They're printing some models for us. Everyone's happy. That was fairly easy. Then we've also got the company I actually work for, Equisoft, is sponsoring our clothing and stuff. So those, like, sort of the lower level kind of things, you know, we managed to slot those into place. Some of the challenges are coming from larger sponsorships, like something like a flight or accommodation or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of the companies that we've been in contact with or have reached out to us are interested in doing it if we're doing this on a permanent basis, and if we're a bit more of a known quantity, which is part of the reason why we like doing these podcasts and trying to get a bit more of the promotion going, is because, like, once we achieve that, hopefully that will become easier, because at the moment it is quite hard.
Okay, so since you've mentioned podcasts and so on, is there anything, any podcast scene, any you've mentioned social media, etc., so anything that you would like the world at large to be acquainted with, anything that is worth recommending, or just places where people could find information about you if they wanted to do some spying on you in the future?
Well, I guess if you want to do some spying, we're all friendly people who like to talk about 40k way too much, so reach out to us individually and we'll give away all our secrets. But other than that, if you follow us on the at Team SA40k Instagram, we're going to be documenting our progress there. We're sharing some photos as we go along, just trying to build hype. And then as far as other community goes, I guess this would also then just be the place where I just say that Carl Grundy, our coach, he's got a Discord and his coaching program called the Pure Tide Grow program, which focuses specifically on Tau and competitive Tau. That would also be a place where you could, you know, talk to the team, members of the team, or get involved if you should want to.
Right. And I'll do my best to put links to both the Instagram account and to Kyle's Pure Tide program in the description of the video. So if anyone is looking for any information about any of those, the description should have that info. And I guess we couldn't let our guest go without the obligatory bird question. Again, Nathan couldn't make it, but he did send in a question, judging by the feedback from some people, from different communities, but also Polish community. The bird questions are the reason why people actually tune in. So I'm going to make you happy now. And this is, and I quote, a question from Nathan. Finally, a national bird that looks like it's up to the challenge. I see the blue crane is the national bird of RSA. Do you think it could win in a fight with the New Zealand's kiwi?
I mean, there's absolutely, utterly no contest. Like, the blue crane, like, wanders around eating snakes for a living. There's no contest. I'm sorry. Like, if we could bring a blue crane to WTC, we would be winning WTC.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's bold. So there is a follow-up question, or a follow-up fight, even. How many blue cranes does it take to beat a New York City pigeon?
Single one. Really? I mean, there has to be a decent chance this pigeon is at least slightly obese, and that if the blue crane remembers to ask it, like, an even vaguely bipartisan political question, it will just be rendered utterly catatonic. So, single blue crane.
Okay, so to anyone who doesn't know or might be wondering, what the fuck? Why are we asking those bird questions? The sheer reason is that for the first time when we brought Nathan in, to do this episode together to see if we vibe well before the WTC, I saw Nathan's background, which looked exactly like the St. Louis office of my company that I visited last year. And since Chicago is not so far from St. Louis, actually, it's very close, I asked this completely random question, whether Chicago also has those wild geese that St. Louis does. Because in St. Louis, there was like a pack of wild geese wandering around the office. And I actually witnessed while working how five of those geese attacked a human being. So I asked about this, and it somehow evolved into what we are doing now. So I have to ask this question: how would the Blue Crane fare against a gang of wild St. Louis geese? Would it stand up in a fight against five of them? Because I think they always move in groups.
I mean, geese are real scary. I think maybe for the geese, we can make a concession and say we'd need to hold two blue cranes, but nothing either.
All right. Okay. Then I think we have our winning bird for the WTC. Maybe for the next year, we can convince Neil, Tom, and Ishik to actually organize like a bird fight competition. So, you know, you can bring just one and we shall see if it's actually that tough. But anyway, Liam, that's it for my questions. Again, is there anything else that you would like to plug, or is the Instagram account and the Pure Tide program everything?
I think the Insta and the Pure Tide program is everything. I guess I'd just like to give a quick shout out to the members of our local community who have in the last couple of weeks like started coming out of the woodwork, lending models, painting stuff, just being immense helps trying to, you know, get us on the road and get us out there. And it's been real amazing.
Yeah, and if you want to mention any of your sponsors, I think it's the right place to do it as well. I mean, if they can get any international recognition so that they help you more in the future, by all means do, if there is anything that comes to your mind.
Okay, sure, please. So for our clothing sponsors, Equisoft, for our 3D printing sponsors, Dragonfire Designs, and Madness 3D, thank you very much for all of you guys' effort.
Yeah, absolutely. So to everyone listening, do check those companies out. If that helps Team South Africa in the next year, or, you know, to cover their expenses or anything else, and by all means, go and do it, and do it for all the teams that we see at the WTC, because after listening to the previous episode, you should know that Team Australia usually, you know, maybe not struggles, but has to collect extra money and use the community backing to actually be able to travel. Same goes for some other teams. So if you can help out, by all means, do. Liam, thank you very much. It was a pleasure. I am looking forward to seeing and meeting you at the WTC, and fingers crossed for that, you know, that you're going to perform like your bird, let's say, and you're going to kick everyone's butt. Yeah, exactly.
Thank you so much, Tariq. Thanks for the conversation.
And to anyone else, stay tuned, because there is one more episode with Team Israel coming up, so that you will hear that in a few moments. And welcome back, everyone. Welcome to part 4 of this episode that I still haven't figured out how to call, but probably you know the title already since you were watching it. The time has come to talk about Team Israel. And with me today to talk about Team Israel, I have the vice captain of the team, as far as if I understood that correctly, yeah, and the spokesperson of Team Israel, Dor Cohen. Welcome, dude.
Thank you. Thank you. Very nice to be here.
And it's great to have you as well. I must say, when your captain gave me your name, my first like association was The Witcher. Your name sounds like you're about to pick up a sword fight with Henry Cavill. Like, how far is that from the truth?
Well, I wish. I think, first of all, this is the nicest compliment I've ever received from anyone, ever. I'd love that. You know, Henry Cavill, if you're watching this, hit me up.
You're up for a duel.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it just sounds like, the name sounds like straight from The Witcher, like, I don't know, The Witcher Stronghold or something. Anyway, listen, so we're here to talk about Warhammer 40K. We're here to talk about the WTC. We're here to talk about your team and what your team's plans at the WTC are. So first of all, I'll ask the question that I asked to the captain of Team New Zealand. What took you so long? Why 2023? Why not earlier? What happened?
So I think that the hobby in Israel is still, I'd say, new. Like, we have a community of players who've been playing for a few years, some of them from, you know, even like multiple editions ago. But I said, like, we never actually came together as a, I guess, as a, with this idea of going beyond it until very recently. We finally realized, like, I've been playing on and off for a few editions, but I started like kind of my competitive journey in ninth. Some people came from before, and I feel like it reached this culmination now with enough people who are really feeling strongly about the hobby, about competitive play, and that we finally came together and said, like, okay, you know, maybe it's time. We should form this team. We should try and go to the WTC to experience it, you know, meeting people from the rest of the community. And also, flight tickets are expensive. So, but we really needed to, we finally got to this kind of idea of, you know, uniting to as a team to try, I guess we'll call it real competitive 40K, which we obviously play competitive here in Israel. But you'll get at most like 30 people in a tournament, 40 people in a tournament. So doing something at that scale is something we are super excited about. And I'm really happy it's finally happening.
And we're happy to have you as well, or the WTC is definitely happy to have you as well. But the WTC, obviously, as the name implies, is a team championship. So how much experience does your team have? You said that, you know, there are like top 30 people at an event. So do you get to practice as a team at all, or is it all based on individual performances?
So we actually do hold team tournaments as well, not at the scale of the WTC, but usually like 3-people team tournaments, 4-people team tournaments. And it's actually one of our favorite kind of formats, just because it adds this kind of spice, let's call it. And it also doesn't necessarily abide by the same rules as singles tournaments. Obviously, there is still a meta. Obviously, there are still strong armies. But, you know, one person can be the best player or like have the best armies. But it doesn't matter if the rest of the team, you know, doesn't find a way to match up correctly. So we are definitely, you know, we worked as well in the past year on also doing a lot of these to train up. And we also have, we actually flew to Cyprus 2 weeks ago to go against Team Cyprus and a few others, which was super fun. Also to practice against like an international crowd. We got second place, which was nice.
Congrats.
Thank you. And we definitely try to train as much as possible.
Okay. So let's take a step back. Let's delve a little bit into how the team is formed. So you said the community is not that big. So how do you go about building a team? Is it like spreading the word in social media, or do you contact your local gaming stores, if there are any, and then the gaming stores do the job for you? How does it happen, and how does the selection look like, and who do you look for when forming a team?
So actually, it was almost happened like the Avengers, I'll tell you. I'll be honest. We had part of this being a very small community is that we don't necessarily have the kind of support here in Israel. We do have a few stores, and there was one that opened up last year that the owner is a very avid 40K player, and so he kind of decided to get the team together, and based on his love of the game and, you know, wanting to, you know, to make this happen, especially since he knew that there are so many ambitious players in Israel that want to try this. He actually kind of got the team together, and it's basically based on some of Israel's most experienced players. and also some people that we saw as having, you know, a lot of potential, especially with the training we've been doing and stuff like that. So basically, you know, we got together a team of really passionate players. I'm saying, like, seriously, it's like Nick Fury appearing from point to point, like saying, hey, have you heard about the Team Israel in the WTC initiative? And it worked.
So I understand that you're not worried about any competition since you have the Hulk on the team.
Yeah, exactly. We have a Hulk.
Yeah, Hulk is going to smash.
Yeah, I actually shared the exact meme yesterday about... Yeah.
Great minds think alike.
It's exactly that. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so...
You can guess which 40K model was the Hulk, so...
Easy. So tell me, what's your plan? Like, or maybe before we go to like the plan and what you want to achieve, tell us about your preparations. You mentioned you went to Cyprus to participate in a tournament, but is your team, would you call your team experienced? Again, like the community at large probably knows close to nothing about Israel and the 40K scene there. So are the people on the team seasoned players, or are those people who have just picked up the game? Like, how experienced are they?
So I think it's a range. Most of our players have been actually playing since very early editions. I guess it's early. It's more like half, like fifth, fourth. It's not early editions. Mm-hmm. I personally, as I said, like I did play a bit of fifth, a bit of seventh, but I only really got into the game kind of all in the beginning of ninth, which is 3 years ago already. But I've been kind of playing avidly ever since and practicing and training. And I knew from the beginning that I want to go into competitive. You know, when you compare it to the rest of the world, obviously, it's not as much experience as, you know, there are people who are going regularly to huge tournaments, to huge GTs, stuff like that. So I wouldn't say we're on the same scale, but we are definitely, you know, have the ambition and to you know, compensate for that. Mm-hmm. And we've been really practicing nonstop to make sure that we understand all possible matchups, that we understand all possible kind of kind of things that can happen and mm-hmm. make sure that we are playing to the best of our ability. And, you know, also thinking, you know, we are underdogs at the end of the day. So also trying to think like an underdog and seeing like maybe how we can disrupt things a bit, how we can, you know, do some unexpected things while also keeping to some, you know, obviously kind of, I guess, proven methods, but also try to obviously in list building, not like mm-hmm. in the actual games, like, oh, oops, your model is, your Wraith Knight fell on the floor. Oh, too bad. No, so not like that. You know, we're trying to always think like how we can make sure that we are not just coming as a new team, but also try to surprise and, you know, I guess catch people who are, underestimate us, you know, off guard. Mm-hmm. So we're definitely working hard on that.
Yeah, so it's always fascinating, especially for those like smaller countries or countries that are new to the event, how they prepare, for example, how they approach list building, whether they net list, whether they monitor and follow some any sort of trend, global trends, or, you know, I don't know, American trends because their meta is so dominating, or whether they actually try to be innovative. So what is it for you? Which one is it? Do you follow the trends? And if yes, then, you know, where do you take your inspiration from? Or do you want to be innovative at all costs? Because, say, Australia last year proved that it pays off to be innovative.
So we are trying to find a middle spot. Like, obviously, when we're looking at lists or the meta, I think that the WTC in and of itself is very meta it's not necessarily reliant on the meta, like we know, like it's being published, like the US meta, I'd say, is very different. They're not using the same sets of terrain necessarily. Like we can see it, for example, with the Tacoma Open, not, you know, the things that would win there would not win in the WTC per se. And so, and also in Israel, we have our own kind of, I wouldn't say call it meta necessarily, but we also have our own kind of style of play or thinking. Like we are playing with WTC terrain. We've been WTC compliant since like we started playing regularly. And so I'd say it's a mix. It's always trying to understand, like, first of all, how, what kind of lists can we expect in the WTC? What kind of lists are very strong right now? Trying to find a way of, you know, how to disrupt that as well. Because if we can bring a very strong list, but someone else can think like, oh, everyone is bringing this list, so let's try to tailor to that. So we're trying to find like a middle spot. But I'd say that actually, and it's kind of very surprising. I don't necessarily surprising, but we actually very naturally found the things that we are gravitating towards to also be things that are winning. So I don't know if it's an experience thing, but I feel like we are always trying to also balance between what is strong right now, what wouldn't be expected, and you know how we can mix those two together to create something new.
So has any, like, when you were forming the team and say choosing the armies for the team, did anyone have to go out of their comfort zone and pick up a new army because the team needed it? Or would you rather have all your players play the armies that they are comfortable with, but know that they will play them well in every matchup? Like, what's the approach?
So we went with, that's also like most of the people who are playing, playing armies that are, that they know and they've been playing for a long time already. But even within that, you know, it's not only necessarily picking the, you know, you can play the faction you know, but it's, especially with the beginning of 10th and especially with things changing up, it requires a lot of trying to think again about how the faction plays and how to play it correctly. We do have someone playing a new army just because we were thinking that it would fit better. And also, you know, we are trying some new things, you know, with the allies becoming a thing again. We are trying to find some new combinations that would be also useful that some players wouldn't be used to because it hasn't been a thing for a while.
Okay. So what is, I guess it's the right time to ask the question. What is your team's ambition at the event? So you are a newcomer. Do you want to, you know, kick the door open and say, we're here, respect us, and so on? Do you come there to essentially make friends, network, be part of the community, and that makes you happy? Or do you actually come with an ambition to, you know, kick someone's ass, for example? I don't know, Cyprus maybe, because you've been competing already. So do you have any beef coming to the event or not yet?
Actually, no, it was no beef with Cyprus. We love them. It was super fun playing with them. Really amazing guys. And I can tell you, like, my ambition, I'm a very simple guy. I just want to meet Adam Camilleri.
Me too.
We are not, you know, we are coming, first of all, because we're a new team, we really want to, like, we don't want to, like, you know, come in guns blazing or something like that. Obviously, winning is fun, winning is nice. As I said, like, we want to try and surprise people. But I feel like the main thing is really, you know, coming to be part of the global community and coming to meet all of those amazing players, some of them coming every year, some of them coming for the first time, and really understand what it is like to be a Warhammer player in like the global sense, trying to meet, you know, seeing who the other communities are like, what the other communities are like, meeting people, learning from them. As I said, we are a rather small community here in Israel playing 40K, and we're all very ambitious about it and love the game. So it would be amazing to learn from other communities, other countries, you know, how they approach the hobby and how they, you know, build the community. So I think that's really the main thing. It's really becoming part of the big global community.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So talking about the big community, all the big players, all the celebrities that like Adam Camilleri, for example, but also like the top players out there. Do you as a team have any role models that you look up to? Like any countries that you, I don't know, maybe try to mimic some stuff that they do, or, you know, so copy some lists that they are using? Or again, do you stick to your own thing?
So we're definitely looking at you know, with the resources that are available, whether it's BCP, Twitch, whenever things are happening or streaming, we always try to, you know, find how other countries are approaching the game. Mm-hmm. We don't have any, and this is also, again, part of us coming to the WTC, is to learn about the hobby at large and the competitive scene. And to, you know, start thinking about like the other countries, how they're playing, understanding how all of this works. So I think that there's no like one specific role model, but we are definitely trying to just follow what is happening in the global scene through places like BCP, for example, and just trying to understand where each country is taking the meta. And try to find like a middle point, you know.
Sounds like a reasonable approach with the resources available, definitely.
Yeah.
So, are you bringing anyone else with you to the event? Because this is like we've been interviewing the top, let's say, top 10 teams. 9 out of the top 10 teams so far. We are recording with France tomorrow, and out of the top 10 teams, I think 90% of them, if not all, said that they are bringing extra staff with them. So they are bringing either a coach or a media person. There are, I think, 2 teams that we've interviewed that are bringing their own chef who is going to cook for them.
Amazing. So, an idea for next year. I'll let you know.
There you go. So the let's call them experienced teams bring those additional members of staff because they've learned that it is important to have someone who can help the team, even if it's just by you know, bringing water bottles or something like that. So do you have someone like that as well? Is that something that also that you also caught on while preparing, or not this year?
So I think not this year is the answer. We do have one person coming to kind of take photos, take care of the media part. We really hope that us attending this year, you know, would be a very successful pilot that would hype up people here in Israel as well to join next year. If not, you know, come be part of the team, come help. And, you know, the more the merrier at the end of the day. So it's really something that I'm hoping that this year would cause, you know, for mm-hmm. the next year. Sure.
Okay. So I have to ask, if you're bringing let's call him or her the media person, where will that material go? Do you have any social media podcasts or any other like internet scene in Israel that those photos and so on would go to, or like a country Discord? How is that all organized, and where can people find you or find information about you if they want?
So we're actually just starting to work on a Discord for the Israeli community. That's something that might happen very soon, actually. Otherwise, the as I said, we have Nick Fury, the store owner, who is very basically. No, but we have the store called the Geek Shelter, who is basically sponsoring the event and also helped us prepare and gave us really all the tools required to prepare for the event. Mm-hmm. And also the owner would be one of the players, as I said, because he's a huge 40K fan. But most of the stuff will be under, you know, will be published under the store group, basically, on the store page. Mm-hmm. But we're really working hard on making sure that our community has its place. For the longest time, it's something that happened, you know, in a few events here and there, or finding some places in people's houses to play. And we're really starting to build it into something new and something bigger. So I'll, you know, definitely very soon there's going to be a lot more kind of social media things happening. But yeah, at the moment, nothing like public that people could follow.
Okay. All right. So next question that I have actually popped into my head. Yeah, I think yesterday when I was recording an episode with South Africa. But it seems like a let's say an issue that also bigger countries have. And this is model availability, or like miniature availability. And I guess I wanted to touch upon this because even Australia, which won the WTC last year, they say that model availability is an issue. You know, they are literally at the end of the world. So for them, not all models are easily available. Liam from South Africa yesterday mentioned the same. Even when we finished recording, he said, you know, a bunch of the guys will have 3D printed models because it's simply impossible to obtain everything, especially Forge World. How about Israel? I mean, you are cooperating with a shop. I understand that the shop owner probably is trying to obtain as many models as possible, but does model availability affect your list building in any way, or are you actually also finding your ways around it?
So we are finding our ways around it. Luckily, 3D printing is something that has become much more available recently. And you know, I totally get the issue, you know, it's, with the, you know, new edition as well, suddenly new units becoming better. Suddenly, you know, you need a new ways to build lists. Luckily, we don't have that many issues with availability. Just finding some, you know, because a lot of the armies we play already have some players here in Israel as well that would have a large collection, and so we got around it. But definitely in the areas where we are lacking, 3D printing saves the day. And, you know, we are stubborn to try and get the lists we want to play that we think would perform well, and do whatever it takes to make sure that we get these approved and play with them. So if there is anything that is like super Israeli mentality, is the stubbornness to get things exactly the right way. So that's what we're doing.
I think you find yourself welcome in amidst all the players at the WTC, because I think the stubbornness and this kind of approach is common to all the teams that are going there. So you've mentioned that, you know, new models are oftentimes the result of a new edition. So let's focus on that now. How did your players pick up the new edition? So was it a challenge? Are they enjoying it? You know, is it a big change for them, or are the cards a surprise to them? How do you feel about 10th edition? How do you feel about playing it at a major event and not the 9th edition that everyone had known so well?
So I think it's actually super refreshing, and I know 10th edition started a bit on like the left foot in terms of some of the balance things, but I feel like it introduced a lot of really awesome things to play with. I think the cards are a great addition. All of the players agree that it adds a lot of like tactical nuance when it comes to whether picking fixed or tactical. It really helps. And I think that overall, the new rules, you know, clarifying a few things, especially like the rules commentary, suddenly making things that in 9th were a mystery, much clearer. So we all really like the new edition, and we feel like it's just a nice breath of fresh air. And obviously, also super brave of the WTC and all of the captains. Like, there was a majority of captains agreed to do it in 10th, but I just have to commend also all of the organizers of the WTC for being, I don't know, like brave enough to go through with it. And I know they're doing like working super hard around the clock this past few months to get it sorted. So I'm really thankful for it because I think 10th is bringing so many new, amazing, cool things. And especially in a team tournament format, you know, where, as I said, like, it's not necessarily that there's one meta defining army or list. It's all about working together to figure out this edition, figure out how to play against different matchups. I think it's super awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it needs, I'm happy that you highlighted this because I think it needs highlighting that there hasn't been a crazy amount of time to prepare. And then the WTC prepared an FAQ, they prepared the terrain layouts, they updated the terrain layouts, they, you know, needed to remain vigilant for any GW FAQ or other rule changes that they might have, which happened again, so WTC needed to adjust again. And of course, it puts pressure on players as well, because they need to put some extra hours to actually accommodate those changes. But a great amount of work from everyone involved, and I guess, you know, a big thank you to the WTC organizers for that.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, so, with a also with an FAQ coming out in 2-3 days, it might change everything. So.
Yeah. So, but apparently, I think it was Mike Brandt who said that there are some changes coming, like little tweaks. But then a major something is going to come in September. So already.
Yeah, probably it will be tiny, but anyway, yeah, huge thank you for the organizers.
Yeah. All right. So listen, I think we can move to the question from our correspondent from the United States, although he couldn't be here with us, like for the other three parts of this episode. But the question is there. He did his research, and I'm just going to quote the question from him. It has to be a bird-related question now by popular demand. So here we go, and I quote, I kind of wish we were asking cat questions because Israel is home to the caracal, one of the neatest-looking wild cats. Instead, though, I'm going to ask you to tell me about the Israel national bird, the hoopoe. And if you think it stands a chance against a New York City pigeon?
Actually, very interesting question. I think that, first of all, the caracal is an amazing cat. So I definitely agree that's a big contender. I think that the hoopoe is too nice of a bird to actually
engage in a fight.
I honestly think that we actually don't see that many of them around actually anymore. I think especially in the central areas they don't appear as much, but they're definitely much nicer than any bird that might appear in New York, probably.
Yeah, so it doesn't always have to end in a fight, and I think you're the first person who actually didn't answer like, yeah, it's going to trash him, or, you know, like, beat him to the ground, because everyone else actually, you know, engaged in the idea of fighting. Here it can end on peaceful terms, and I think it's going to be equally as well.
Yeah, to anyone... it's just like us, you know, we're just coming for like a nice cup of tea and some 40k games, exactly like the hoopoe.
Exactly. It doesn't always have to end in bloodshed, although when it does, we don't mind it. But to anyone who is not able to see this on screen, I'm actually showing to everyone what a hoopoe looks like. And especially to our Polish listeners, if you can't see this on the screen, I'll tell you that the bird is called Dudek in Polish, like the Polish goalkeeper that used to play for Liverpool, if that name rings a bell. So
that's a really cool name.
And I have never seen, we have that bird in Poland as well, but I have actually never seen it in my life. So yeah, it's I don't know, it's just quite uncommon, or maybe lives in a different part of the country, but I haven't experienced it either. So, but it's a neat bird, one of the coolest looking. Yeah. All right, Listen, Dor, I am done with my questions. Is there anything that you would like to plug, or is there anyone you would like to shout out? Perhaps now is the opportunity to do it before we finish the episode.
So I think really huge thanks to the Geek Shelter, the store that I talked about that helped us with preparing for this. Wouldn't have been able to actually get to where we are without the store. Huge thank you to all of the, you know, we're obviously sending this to the Israeli community. So huge thank you for all of the Israeli community for also supporting us. As I said, big thanks to the WTC organizers. And I really hope, you know, we're coming to have a good time just to roll some dice and have fun and meet everyone. So I really can't wait. I speak for the rest of the team, I think, as well, that we really can't wait to meet everyone and finally feel like we're a part of this much bigger community than we're used to here in Little Israel.
And I think the rest of the community is really keen to see how well you do. And then we will be here and we will be there after the event to report on it. So I guess I can already say this. I can't remember if I said it yesterday, but I'll say it today. I am looking for, I'm planning to make some episodes post-event, not only to talk about, the team that wins, but also the teams that we have spoken with before the event. So it will be extremely interesting to speak to you, to speak to South Africa, New Zealand, Cyprus, to see what your impressions were and, you know, what the lessons learned were from the event, so that maybe other teams that haven't joined the WTC community yet can join in the future years. So it would be fantastic to have you on again to do an interview like that if you are available.
Yeah, for sure. I'd love to.
Fantastic. All right. Then to everyone listening to us, I thank you. Dor, I thank you as well. And to my listeners, you know the drill. If you like what we do, if you want more, like, subscribe, leave a comment to help with the algorithm and help us grow. Also, yesterday I created our Patronite page that is waiting for approval. Normally within 3 working days, so maybe by Wednesday we will have a Patronite. So I will be linking that in the comments. If you want to help out in any way, we would be much obliged as well. So with that, I thank you for your attention, and until next time, bye everyone.